Welcome to episode 282 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow hoco,
Dale McGladry.
I can't talk.
Just watched my tongue, can't do a thing with it.
That's pretty much it. That's what it feels like. Welcome to the media, the littlest hobo media spew for January.
February.
Fuck yes. Let me change that on my piece of paper just so I know we're in the right month. We're talking about February, people. I'm a month behind.
You know, I'm sure I'm just about to jinx myself, but so far I have put down 2020. I haven't put down 2019.
Oh.
When I've been writing dates out, I'm like, wow.
This is a nice change for you?
Usually there's at least once or twice where the brain just slips into last year.
Yeah, I've been doing that a lot, so there is that too. Oops. yeah. We're still Colleen Les. We miss you, Colleen.
Yes.
Hopefully she'll be back next month. But we've got things to talk about.
We do.
Many things.
I did all of my 2019 movie catch-up this month somehow. I don't know how that happened.
Oh!
And there's been a couple really good series drop on Netflix and Hulu. So.
Oh!
Yeah.
You might have to give me some stuff to watch because I'm a little bit behind. I'm actually really behind. There's so much stuff that I need to actually finish watching. Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, Ian is looking forward to hearing what you think about I can't remember the name of the...
Tapeheads,
which yes.
Is still over there, which I'm not giving back because I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's okay. Fine. And Ian has a gazillion, not a gazillion, but a number of thousand of DVDs.
Okay, good. So he's not going to miss one for another month.
As long as it's going to be watched and returned, yes. He's happy.
Yeah, no, it will be watched this month, and I promise.
The voice, whatever that's called.
The director's commentary? The
director's commentary with Catherine Hardwick, who actually did the production stuff, is interesting.
Which is the
for
reason,
sure.
Which is definitely the reason for me to be interested, yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It just does what it is.
I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on
okay.
That.
Okay. I will have notes but next time.
That's a teaser, folks. That's
teaser for what's to come.
For what to come.
So we got movies. You said you had watched a lot. I have not watched a lot, so why don't you go first?
Oh, okay. I hope it doesn't get too much, Dale. But anyway.
I'll jump in.
Well, we'll start with Stand Up Guys from 2012. This is Al Pacino and Christopher Walken and Alan Arkin as kind of three old gangster types that are basically back together again. Al Pacino gets out of jail. This story was problematic on a couple different counts. I can't remember if it would have been problematic for 2012, but definitely for 2020, it's a bit problematic. But you know, it was so cool. Pacino and Walken are so good, and I mean. They're old guys now, like they're playing old guys.
Yeah,
and I loved it. It just watching them act. Like I said, the story was a little bit kind of. Anyway, and the other interesting thing is, quite by accident, because was looking at the features on the DVD. Fisher Stevens directed it, and. I had no idea who Fisher Stevens was until I saw his face, and it's like, oh, that guy. He's like a character actor. He does all of these. And I never thought he would have the chops to direct it. And the other interesting thing about the movie is it's a throwback to an older style. Like, it really did feel like a movie that was filmed more in the 70s than in the 2010s. And I mean that in a good way. Like, that was also part of the charm. So anyway... good acting sure goes a long way. Twice Upon a Yesterday, 1998. It is one of those change the past style of stories.
Okay.
Nothing really notable about it except Lena Headey has come a long way in her acting. Oh my God. Watching her in this, I would have never thought she was as good as she
is.
She ultimately got. Yeah. That was the only reason I wanted to mention that. It's like, God, you just never write off someone.
Yeah.
Midway, which was Roland Emmerich's.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
War movie.
Was it as amazing as it looked? I see that with, you know.
It was, I had very low expectations.
Which is, you know, the key to a Roland Emmerich historical movie.
And it was actually, maybe it was low expectations. It was better than I expected.
Oh, good.
It was watchable, except for a couple scenes that were just like wanting to throw stuff at the TV. Like,
don't break the TV.
Oh, man. Like, yeah, this pilot doing something that he would have been cashered out so damn fast. It just, I understand you need to take some liberties to tell a story, but that was just ridiculous. So the 1976 movie named Midway on the same topic is better in just about every way, in spite of being 1976. But Midway was okay.
Okay.
Jojo Rabbit.
Okay.
Just, wow.
I had really mixed feelings about that movie. I still have mixed feelings about
you.
That movie. I don't love it, but I think, you know, Waikiki is obviously, like, super talented, and he's...
Yeah, for people that might not know kind of what the movie's about, it's about the fall of Berlin with this kind of Waikiki playing... fantasy Hitler, I don't know, or with this little boy. It's a modern fairy tale.
Yeah, totally. That's totally correct.
I found myself, like, hats off to the skill in storytelling, but the thing was, like, the movie didn't really emotionally resonate with me, but I kept going back going like, wow, you made that work. If I read that on the page, I would have said,
yes,
that was going to suck. And you pulled it off. And I was actually taken out of the movie because the production was so good.
I find that, the movie is fine. It's well made. The thing that's, I think, most notable about it is the fact that he managed to make what on the page would seem like this really terrible idea about a comedy with Hitler and actually made it work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work because it's, I don't know, like it's very earnest and authentic, and it feels like not tropey. And
yeah.
I don't know. It just manages to avoid all of the minds that are sort of spewed about that you would think, okay, this thing is just not going to work. It's going to blow up in your face.
It walks a very narrow line.
And it does so really well.
Really well. Yeah. And there was an audience that absolutely, like, it clicked with big time. So,
obviously, yeah.
And very,
I mean, it
cool.
does have some really funny moments.
It does. Oh, I mean, so
the
many.
The little kids are
the,
really
the kids are great. And the way that they write the language around that. And, and his name just slipped my mind. Damn it. There's the one actor who plays the...
I know who you're talking about.
With the feather on his uniform. Yeah, anyway.
Oh.
So I would...
Sam Rockwell.
God,
it took me a minute.
He was amazing in this. Just,
I agree.
I mean, it was partly he had like a really good script to work with, but he delivered it wonderfully.
Agreed.
So if you're at all curious about this movie, I would say see it. But I think that your reaction to it's going to probably be like very personal. I don't think this is a movie you can say will appeal to this kind of person and
exactly.
not that person. Yeah. Okay, in the kind of the similar vein, Test Pilot from 1938, black and white. Clark Gable plays a test pilot who meets and marries Myrna Loy in a kind of a whirlwind romance, and his best friend is Spencer Tracy.
Oh my God, what a cast!
This was like even me not knowing an awful lot about the old movies knew that like this was a big cast. And I don't know.
Is Clark Gable really handsome in it?
Because
he's very handsome.
He is Clark Gable. Yes, he's
superstar. Clark
I recognized
Gable.
Him from the other movies. Yeah, he's. Yeah. I still don't know what to make of this movie. it is a love story intercut with like 10-minute flying scenes.
Okay, so when
it is called Test Pilot.
I don't know.
There's probably not enough flying scenes to make up for the, but it is, I mean, watching this story, there's this crazy vibe between the Tracy and like Spencer Tracy and Clark Gable character. It fascinated me so much. I had to like do a little bit of research, not a lot of research, but TV Tropes described it the best. It's like heterosexual life partners.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Like this vibe between them was, I'd kind of never seen that before. And that's what really had me, well, actually it hammered on a few things like, the relationship between Myrna Loy and Clark Gable, the characters was a little bit dysfunctional. And I found it fascinating in the context of like the 1938 for this kind of thing. Cause it was unlike so many of the other happy movie type relationships.
Yeah.
Myrna Loy's character, like, was not, especially for the time, but was not a shrinking violet, which was cool to see. And Myrna Loy, man, this is only the, I've seen her in the Thin Man series. I have this serious crush on Myrna Loy now. Like, she, the way that she delivers dialogue is just, like, really cool. So anyway,
I think I need to see this.
I don't know what the hell to think of this movie still, but it was kind of a fun watch. And it's a long movie. Like, you don't see very many black and white movies that come in at just under 2 hours.
Oh, so, wow, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. So here I am. I'm still working through this. But and it was it did really well box office. Wise when it came out, so it was a hit.
With that cast, I can't seem surprised.
You know, all of them. I haven't seen a lot of Spencer Tracy. I've seen a couple Clark Gable now, and like I said, Myrna Loy. Yeah, it is a great cast. Oh, and a couple other characters you'll recognize, like the banker from, name is the Jimmy Stewart Christmas movie.
Jesus.
Yeah, right.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
Not Jesus the movie, but you know what I mean. All right, moving on.
Moving on. Yesterday was Danny Boyle movie where...
I was not a fan.
An event happens and the Beatles are only remembered by...
A handful of people.
Yeah, it was a kind of an odd...
Very
movie. I think if it hadn't had the Beatles numbers, I would have been bored. But you know, every time the movie started getting slow, you'd hear another Beatles song. It's like, oh yeah.
I will admit I did not kind of expect the outcome of the other fans that remember the Beatles. Like the way that played out, that was unexpected, and I thought that was pretty neat because it goes against what your usual knee jerk would be.
That to me,
the expectation.
I wasn't sure. Okay, I mean, I loved the scene. The scene was great.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like, oh, we need to punch it up with some controversy here so that it doesn't get too slow. Like, I had that kind of reaction as well. But, no, there were a lot of little moments in it that were quite fun, like when he's trying to remember the lines.
Yes.
And when they're talking about what he got wrong. Like, those were. But, yeah, I mean, in the end, it was kind of pretty throwaway.
Yeah, very much.
1917, this kind of felt like a 2-hour video game cut sequence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I liked it a lot more than you did, obviously. Oh,
it was an adequate war story. But I I'm not even joking. There was a couple moments where I had this reaction, like, I felt like I needed to pick up a game controller because the action was about to start where I take control.
Yeah.
So for people that aren't familiar with the movie, it was... not done as a one shot, but it was a simulated one shot where there's continuous action through the whole movie. And I found it took me out of the movie a little bit. Like it was, like I said, I just kept getting this video game vibe because that's the way the video game.
Okay. And maybe it's because I don't play video games, at least not the new ones as much. That actually never even crossed my mind, to be totally honest.
Hmm.
I was really immersed in the story. But I mean, there are certain moments that I like more than others and certain sequences that I like more than others. But generally speaking, I thought it was really well done.
Bombshell.
Oh, yeah.
I saw Bombshell. Then that's the Roger Ailes, Fox News. Yeah. Megan Fox and others.
Yeah.
So wow, Charlize Theron continues to completely blow my socks off. That woman. At this point, if someone was going to ask me, what, you know, who the top actor of, was it 20th century, I don't know how you describe our era, but she would definitely be top three, if not top one.
She certainly tackles the material, whatever material she's tackling, with grace and power. She's very, very, and she's really underrated.
Yeah.
And I think in part it's because she sometimes makes movies that are more like mainstream, and I guess would be considered like Hollywood blockbusters. So people kind of write, I think people forget that she can really, really act.
To her flexibility, and like, I had the look to see Charlize Theron.
Oh yeah, no. Like there. The makeup in this movie is like stupendous.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I actually, the thing that I liked most about, I prefer, if I was to select between one of the two Roger Ailes sort of stories from last year, I think The Loudest Voice is a better adaptation, but then it's also a miniseries, right?
Yeah.
Like it's 8 hours or whatever it is of telling the story, which I think, you know, manages it. Lets the story breathe a little bit more, and it gives the actors more room to sort of expand on it as sort of like a wide brush stroke of, you know, the general, getting a general sense of the story. I think Bombshell is adequate, but I think that the reason the movie is really successful is because of the performances.
Yeah.
And not just from, like, Charlize is really, really good, but I think Nicole Kidman is really good. And so is Margot Robbie.
Yeah, no, all the performances.
Yeah, I thought they were all quite good.
Are good. I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how many good performances there are in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the subject matter was super interesting, and the way they presented it, like that one scene with one of the characters where the guy is propositioning her, and she's like, you hear her inner monologue.
Voice, yeah.
That scene was brilliant.
Yeah. There's some great writing here.
Yeah. And some of it I found a bit uncomfortable. It was totally.
Like, there's a couple of scenes that are particularly hard to watch.
The interesting thing to me is I can't remember who directed it, but.
What's his name?
The director and the editor, they put in the long pauses. They weren't afraid of the long pauses. Yeah. And that's part of what did it for me. Like, they could have disarmed the tension so easily by just doing a shortcut, and they just let it sit there, and wow.
And sometimes those pregnant pauses are the most effective.
Yeah. It's funny. This is one of those movies where I'm not sure good is the right label to put on it to, but I'm glad I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And The Reluctant Astronaut from 1967, Don Knotts comedy.
Oh,
not for me.
Oh.
It is always fun watching some of these old movies, but I'm just so not a Don Knotts fan. I'm sure he's a very nice man, but Little Women. I have not read the book. This was a great little story. I love the meta in the ending. And I also understand why it wasn't nominated. 'Cause one of the fascinating things about the movie, like, is the different reactions. Like, the women that I know that saw this movie absolutely loved it. And so Greta Gerwig obviously connected with a lot of people on it. And I was not in that demographic. And so I can kind of understand why the Academy maybe didn't understand that. I think that's why representation in these places is so important. So we get that variety of things to highlight.
I love this movie. And it's funny because one of the complaints that I heard quite a bit about it was people were confused by the timeline. Because the movie is not told sequentially, and the timeline is kind of cut and intercut. The stories are sort of intercut.
I found that a bit confusing too.
Okay, so when I watched the movie the first time, that did not even cross my mind. Like, I was in it. the whole thing made sense to me. I was never confused by what period we were in and where we were in the story. So I thought, well, did I miss something or did people just not get it? Like, I have no idea. So I watched it just recently again because my mom wanted to see it. So I watched it with my mom. And I'm like, I still don't get it. Like, I don't understand why it's difficult to follow. And I can't figure out why, because my mom was the same thing. She's like, oh, wait, where are we now? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Are you not watching? Are you not watching what's going on?
I think that's the thing is the movie invites you to take a very casual watch of it. And if you aren't paying attention, the first jump what left me a little bit like, oh, wow, wait a minute. And then it's like, oh, okay. And then I started paying like a little bit more attention to some of the other anchors, you know, going on. And I was fine after that. But
it's kind of funny that the two movies that I've watched the most this, I'm going to say holiday season because they're kind of holiday movies, but not really. I saw Parasite like 5 times. With various people. It's like Dan wanted to see it, then my cousin wanted to see it, then my parents wanted to see it. So I ended up watching it like multiple times because every time everybody wanted to watch Parasite, I'm like, yeah, I'll rewatch Parasite. And the other one was Little Women, which I think I rewatched 3 times.
It is. I mean, yeah, I don't want to underplay how much I enjoyed it. Like, it is a really charming movie.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why, there's certain movies that Hollywood does not reward. And charming movies is one of those.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, like, there's some other genres that Hollywood really does not super recognize. Mm-hmm, and I felt hard done by that sometimes.
And it's funny because I get the sense that like for a long time it was, if it was a period piece, it was almost guaranteed to get some sort of Oscar love. And that seems to like have gone totally the opposite now. It's like if it's a period piece, it's even harder to try to get a nomination now.
Oh, that's interesting.
I kind of get that sense. I'm just generalizing and it's just from my own personal observation, but that's kind of what it feels like.
I have honestly stopped watching the Oscars. I just don't care what,
but they got it right, goddammit.
And then Parasite. I mean, it's always fun following. I still follow the news.
Yeah, yeah.
But the actual ceremonies, like I can watch the high points on YouTube afterwards.
I still like watching it. Doesn't mean that it's important, but I still like watching it.
Yeah, so anyway, yes, I see Little Women, people.
Yay!
It's a really wonderful little movie. It's a wonderful big movie. I don't know. Anyway,
it's moving on. It's a wonderful movie.
Moving on. The Night Clerk. Watched this because I saw you post about it
and I got curious.
It's another movie. I don't know what to think of this. This was super well done. This is me in particular, but I always love breaking down a movie. Like, what was this trying to say? Did it say it well? Did I emotionally connect with it? And this character was a little bit hard for me to kind of connect with. But the movie theme was interesting. The whole presentation was interesting. They did a remarkable job of getting into the head of somebody that is on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that part of it. And as a story, the bones held together really well. But at the end of it, I was like, that was interesting. I don't know what I think of this.
Yeah, I was a bit confused by it. Well, the thing that I'm always more, especially now I'm more cognizant of it, I'm always kind of like on the fence about, okay, so you're dealing with the story of someone that is, like you say, like on the spectrum, but you haven't really, like, is this, what's the word that I'm thinking of? Like, is this being, I've lost the words. Is this being like respectful?
Yeah.
That's always what I'm kind of thinking. I'm like, how are you actually handling this character and how this character is dealing with these specific situations?
Well,
and I thought the Night Clerk actually did a fairly good job of, I mean, for me, like there weren't like any red flags.
Yeah.
I didn't think.
Yeah. And that, I mean, as far as I can tell, I would agree with you. You know, you always need to hear from that community to know. That same philosophy is, you know, when we were talking, when we taped the movie previews, there was a movie about a cow.
Mm-hmm.
That was the same kind of concern I had with some of the characters in that movie.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But Ana de Armas is Great.
Now, they did a really good job between her character and the lead, whose name I've forgotten.
I can't remember his name. Is it Butterfield? Is that him, or is this the other guy?
It's the other guy.
Yeah,
I don't remember. It wasn't Asa Butterfield.
No.
Anyway, it's on Netflix. So.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, is it? I think.
No, it's on demand. I don't think it's on Netflix.
Oh, sorry. Okay, no, I forgot where I've seen it now. I thought it was Netflix. I should actually note that stuff. Anyway, it's out there, folks. Finally, Jumanji, The Next Level.
We watched the original.
Oh, okay.
I finally watched the original, Dale. I did it.
Awesome.
And it was fun.
With Robin Williams.
No.
Oh,
the first one. I'd already seen that original.
Okay.
Yeah. I should say the first one. I watched the first Jumanji. Or the remake.
The second. I wasn't sure whether to call it
like the remake.
The sequel to the reboot. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know the one I mean. The okay. first one with the
now,
rock.
Now I do.
I finally yes. watched it.
Yes.
And I didn't hate it. So there was that.
You didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it. Dan and I watched it. I'm like, okay, this is actually kind of fun. Now we're ready for round two. Eventually we'll watch it.
Yeah. It was the first one with the rock was definitely way more fun than I expected. I was shitting all over it because it's like Jumanji didn't need a remake.
A reboot, and yeah.
It sort of is and isn't a reboot, I guess.
Well, because they've changed it enough.
It went from being a board game to a video game.
Yeah.
The first movie. Again, I'll use this word, but I found it like super charming. It dealt with the stuff really well.
Yeah.
The next level, which is, I don't know, I will just call it the third movie in the franchise at this point.
Sure.
Or sequel. The story was a bit strained. It had two story threads going on and it didn't really handle them. It didn't do justice to either one.
Oh.
And the way that they set the story up was really a little contrived, I thought. Or maybe it wouldn't have been if the writing was a bit better, but it really didn't pull that off. But even having said that, after kind of a slow start, I enjoyed it in the end. So it was a fun watch. It's not going to be notable in any way.
I'm in no hurry then.
What did you do for movies?
Not a lot. I haven't seen a lot, but I did catch up on some TV, but... Movie wise, I watched Richard Jewell, the Clint Eastwood movie with what's his name? Paul Walter Hauser as playing Richard Jewell, the guy that they thought had done the 1996 bombing.
Yeah,
it's really solidly made, really like cemented by great performances. Like Hauser is fantastic, and so is Kathy Bates, who plays his mother. Both really good performances. The movie is solid. It's pretty good. It's one of the better Clint Eastwood movies.
Oh, good.
For me. Clint
Eastwood has this habit of almost getting it across the line, but not quite.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm exactly in the same boat. Like sometimes I feel like he doesn't quite get there and other times he does. This is one of the times where, for me at least, I think he does get it across the line. I thought the movie was really well done, but really cemented by like some really great performances. Cause some of the politics are really problematic and some of the way that the drama is handled is problematic. Because I mean, one of the things that he gets into is they write this character, which isn't a real character, which is a reporter that they kind of suggest.
Oh, that was
around.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's really problematic.
That is super problematic.
Especially when it didn't happen.
And in this time and place.
Yeah, it feels super out of place.
Reporting is out of it under attack. Yeah.
Yeah, like it just seems really irresponsible for like no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
that was for me the big kind of red flag. Otherwise, I thought, generally speaking, the movie is quite good.
Yeah.
Really cemented by the performances.
And sounds like it didn't even need to be there. Really.
No, it didn't. It really, really didn't. I also saw Miss Americana. This one is on Netflix. This is the documentary on Taylor Swift, which kind of, it does follow Taylor Swift in the like 2 or 3 years where she kind of fell off the public eye. She kind of took a step back and rearranged her life and kind of came into herself. And the documentary kind of looks at you know, a young woman who was in the public eye, that has always been sort of managed and controlled by, you know, the...
Apparently a real dick.
Well, it's more of, it's not really a person. I think it's a combination of, you know, the people that were in her life and just general perception and, you know, the hardships of having to be a young woman in the public eye and the expectation that comes with what you can, what is and isn't allowable
okay.
for a young woman to do. And it gets pretty deep in times. I mean, I thought, and I mean, it's not the greatest documentary, but I think the subject matter is really important.
Did it get into her whole song library ownership?
No,
no, okay.
No, that's something that's very much on the kind of on the outside. It's mostly about like kind of everything else. I mean, okay. That certainly plays a part, and it's impossible to watch a documentary and not be aware that that's also part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a really, I don't want to say it's like a really important documentary because, you know, it's important to a degree, but I think culturally it touches on some really important things that I think are worth noting, and it's pretty well made. So I would certainly say it's worth checking out, and it's not like you have to go too far out of your way to see it. It's streaming on Netflix. You can catch it anytime. Also on Netflix, Horse Girl, which is the Alison Brie movie about this young woman who has a sleeping disorder, which is kind of like turning her life upside down. She's living in a reality that might be part dream. Like, it's very, very complicated. And that's part of the problem. Like, the movie is just kind of a mess. Alison Brie is really, really good in it. Like, her performance is great, but the movie is just kind of a disaster. I wouldn't particularly recommend it. The Last Thing He Wanted, this is the Dee Reese adaptation of the Joan Didion novel. About a reporter who is reporting on the Contras, who is taken off the desk and then becomes involved in that whole world through her father, her estranged father, who's now suddenly come back into her life. It's super convoluted. I mean, I'm not a Joan Didion fan. God, don't strike me down, please. So to me, the story was new. I wasn't familiar with it. I like Dee Reese. She's a really talented filmmaker, but this is a total fucking disaster. Like, the most interesting part about this movie is the fact that Anne Hathaway looks like she's suntanned for, like, the entire thing. And I'm like, I've never seen so many freckles on you. This is amazing. Embrace your freckles. I know it's probably makeup, but whatever. It's just kind of like a disaster in the making. And Ben Affleck, isn't it? And it's just, the whole thing is weird. It's just, it's so strange. It's this 2-hour thing that's just kind of a mess. And you're watching it and you're like, wow, this is not good. But I'm still watching what's going on.
Do you need to kind of know a little bit about Joan Didion to...
I don't think so. I mean, maybe...
Because I don't. Like, don't strike me down either.
I know. No, well, neither do I. So maybe that's the problem. I don't know. But apparently the novel is, like, really well loved. So I have no idea. It's just kind of a mess. Swallow, which is Carlo Mirabella Davis's film starring Halle Bennett about a woman that eats things. She has that disorder, something or other. I can't remember what it's called, where, you know, you have the, you want to eat things that aren't food.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's really, really good. Like, it kind of starts as a movie about that and then turns into something totally different. And the ending is super. Highly, highly recommended. I quite enjoyed it. And then Emma. This is Autumn de Wilde's new adaptation of the Jane Austen novel. Still a period piece. Just looks very unique. Like, her visual style is very her own. And the movie looks amazing. Okay, so I need to proceed this by saying Emma, to begin with, is not my favorite Jane Austen. So I'm always kind of like, it's Emma, not my favorite. But it's Jane Austen, so, you know, I'll go and see it. I really like Emma Taylor-Joy, who plays Emma, so she's great. What's his name? Hold on. Johnny Flynn plays Mr. Darcy, and he's pretty great. But the best part of the movie is Emma's dad is played by Bill Nighy, and it's he's so funny. Like, they really, really amp the laughs, and it works really, really well.
I remember this trailer.
Yeah. I was very disappointed. So much so that I came home, and I'm not even joking, I rewatched Pride and Prejudice. No joke. I came home. That's what I started watching it on the way home, and I finished it when I got here. I needed to, like, cleanse myself.
Wow.
That's kind of what it felt like. And let's, to be clear, the Pride and Prejudice version that's on Netflix does not end the way, it's not the one that I prefer. I don't know if it's the British ending or the American ending, but it, like, there's two versions of the movie. This is so, like, anal retentive on my part. There are two endings to the movie. They're both on, like, the box set that came out when the movie was released.
God knows how many years ago. That is so weird.
Yeah. So one of them has the Mr. Darcy cutscene at the end, and the other one, the Mrs. Darcy cutscene at the end. The other one doesn't. So the version that's on Netflix, there is not one kiss in the entire movie. Not what, it's a romance movie where nobody kisses people. It's amazing.
Well, you know, but no, it wasn't Victorian times, was it? It was Regency.
Yeah, Regency. But still, like, the fact that you have...
Very chaste.
Yeah, very, very chaste. So I tend to prefer the other version that has the little kiss at the end. But that's just...
Scandalous.
Super scandalous. And that's it. That's all I have for movies.
Okay. TV?
Yeah.
You first.
Okay. So, oh, I'll keep talking. Okay, so...
Do you need a break?
No, I'm good. I don't have that many.
Okay.
We watched Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet, which is an Apple Plus comedy show about the making of an MMORPG.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. It's really, really funny. So the episodes are about between 20 and 26 minutes long, and it's really about a studio... that has overseers in Montreal. So whenever the big corporation calls, it's Montreal calling. And it's just about, like, these people that are working through the latest update to this massive online role-playing game. It's very funny. There is what my favorite episode of the entire series, I think that they're probably going to do more, is an episode that doesn't actually fall within the construct of this particular game. It's actually, I don't know how it fits into the overall story. I don't know if they're going to come back to it at some point, because it features two characters that are never talked about. So I don't know how it fits into the whole thing, but it's just really interesting. And it's hilarious. My favorite.
What was it called again?
Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet.
Okay.
So Raven's Banquet is the name of the game.
Yeah.
And I guess Mythic Quest is the name of the company. I don't actually know.
Funny. Yeah. When you go Mythic and Quest, that brings... It evokes so many...
But there's this
hilarious... I mean, this is World of Warcraft, right? Well,
sort of. Yeah, pretty much. But there's this hilarious thing with, like, streamers and, like, Twitch, and how the kid that's, like, making or breaking the game is this kid who's, like, 12.
Yeah, of course.
Called PewDiePie. And whenever, like, they're about to cut to him, they've got, like, pew, 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 because he, like, rates things by, like, buttholes or something. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the character's actually called PewDiePie?
Yeah.
Isn't that like a real Twitch streamer?
I think so.
Streamer who got in trouble?
I might not have the correct name. That's okay. It's Beauty something or other. I don't know, guys. It's really funny.
Okay.
I highly recommend it. I thought it was great.
I'm interested.
I watched the final season of Unreal, the show about the making of a reality TV show.
Oh,
like,
okay. Right.
The one with the rose, I can't remember.
The Bachelor.
Yeah, The Bachelor. I waited for a long time to watch this. I don't know why, mostly because it was the final season, and I really, really, really like the show. It's a little underwhelming. Like, Rachel takes over, and things kind of get really weird, and I don't know. I didn't find it as good as the other seasons, so it was a little bit underwhelming, but it's done now, so there's that.
Endings are hard.
They are hard.
To get that emotional satisfaction when the whole thing is over.
Yeah, well, and I think that there was some, because there was all this sort of flurry around when they were about to do the final season, because it sounded like they weren't even going to get a chance to do the final season. Then the final season was delayed, and I don't know if what's her name, Moxon. I don't know if she actually had full control over the final season. The whole thing
was this Marty Noxon?
Yeah. So I don't know. It's okay. Like, it's not the greatest. It's not the worst. The care, it's still within, like, the characters and the whole thing of the show. I didn't love it. I was a bit disappointed by it. And then...
But if you've watched it for four seasons, you pretty much have to do five.
Exactly. You would hope. But no, it's done now. And then I watched Servant, the Apple TV Plus show that was like the big thing because... what's his name? M. Night Shyamalan had directed a couple of episodes. I think he directed the pilot in the first couple of episodes. It stars Lauren Ambrose as a woman whose baby dies shortly after birth. And she goes into like total shock. So they get like a real life. It looks like a real baby to sort of help her get over the grief. And at some point they were going to remove this, you know, when she kind of was feeling better, they were going to remove the baby.
Uh-huh.
But they end up hiring a nanny to babysit this baby. And then things just get really fucking weird, really, really fast. I really like this show. And the father is played by Toby Kebbell. And he creates recipes, basically.
Okay.
So he's always at home, like, making weird food. There's just so much weirdness in this movie, in the show. It's really good. I rather enjoyed it. And it's creepy, but not like in a horror kind of way. It's just generally creepy. But yeah, I would recommend it. It's, I think, 9 or 10 episodes or maybe 8. I don't actually know, but totally worth it. And that's all I saw.
Oh, okay. I have been doing... some marathoning.
No.
I don't want to use the word binging, but let's start off with a new show, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Oh, yeah, done locally.
Yeah, which is, when you see the show, pretty remarkable because they are definitely shooting exteriors in San Francisco or something.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of Glee meets Wonderfalls, if people remember Wonderfalls.
It's still on my to-watch list. It's literally on the desktop of my computer.
At the time of us recording... I've seen 3 episodes of it. The second episode was a dog. The first episode I kind of adored, which got me into it, and I enjoyed the third episode. The premise of the show is she, because reasons we don't really know, doesn't matter anyway, hears people's emotional state through song. So like Glee, people just break into song.
Like popular songs?
Yes, popular songs. I'm really digging the song choices.
Okay.
They bring back some memories. They have a few more modern ones in there too. I hope they don't just stick to the retro. But they've introduced, like, there's an element of fate wanting her to take an action, which is where the Wonderfalls thing comes in. So it isn't just the singing. And it's kind of delightful, and I hate musicals. So there you go. Lock and Key.
Oh, yeah, Netflix.
Netflix. So uneven. I loved the suspense with the keys. Like, there were lots of elements in here that I really liked. But there was also times where I was like, the characters were good, but the way that the characters behave drove me crazy sometimes.
Oh.
There's a couple, like the little boy character is just amazing. But the older brother and sister, there's just sometimes they do things and I'm like, why? That doesn't make, like, literally it's like, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh.
But they do have some really cool ideas. Like, I watched it to the end. The end was kind of, to me, like Man in the High Castle season 1. It didn't feel like it was an ending. It felt like a mid-season kind of climax. I don't know if I'm going to watch season 2.
So do you think the problem is with the writing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have read the first of the graphic novels, which didn't get very far into the series, really. So I have no idea how canon to the series it is, but the writers just did not understand, to my mind, like, character and story flow. It wasn't even that it was being lazy. It was just kind of wrong. Like, we need to get from here to there, but we did it badly.
I don't know.
Form your own opinion. Like I said, there was lots of things I enjoyed about it, but I talked to lots of people that had the same reaction I did too. Like, I just could not get past the way these characters, like, why did they do that?
Okay.
High Fidelity on Hulu.
Oh.
Based on the Hornby book, which was also a movie with John Cusack made in 2000.
Come on, dude. The boombox scene is like...
Oh, no. That's not...
Oh, no, wait.
This is the one about the list.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The Champion bookstore or Champion record store.
Yes, the record store. Yeah. Ah, fuck. This is so appropriate now, isn't it?
Maybe. They switched genders of the main character. They kept the name Robin. Zoe Kravitz plays Robin. Okay. She fucking nails it.
Okay. I might have to watch this now.
I loved watching her.
I really like her.
Even when the character was being an asshole. Like, and I think that was one of the things. I don't remember much about the movie, to be perfectly honest.
Apparently, neither do I. I confused it with something else totally.
I think the movie was a little forgettable, honestly. Like, I remember more about it than I do a lot of movies that I saw back then. But it... Nothing stands out. This one, Kravitz breaks the fourth wall a lot, and it's wonderful. Like there's a few episodes I like less than others, but and it really it had this really quiet. Like after the first three episodes, I was kind of like, I could take or leave this, but then I kept thinking about it. It's like, oh no, this has like more of a penetration or like an impact than I thought it did.
I literally just added it to my
list. Yeah. I liked it. I liked how the characters weren't perfect. I liked some of the imperfections. I liked like the passion that the characters showed for the music. And I particularly liked how Kravitz, when she was talking to the audience, just achieved this wonderful kind of, I don't even know what the word was for. I was going to say intimacy, but it's not intimacy, but I just felt like super warm and not put on. And I liked it.
Awesome.
Altered Carbon season 2.
Okay. No details, please.
Okay.
Please. My ears are virgin.
Okay.
I haven't seen any of it yet.
I will not say a thing until you bring it up on TV. Except to say that I can watch Simone Missick all freaking day. I don't know what it is about her performances. Like she was in Luke Cage. She's in All Rising. I saw her here and I just love the way this woman delivers a line. And the rest of the show, I will defer comment on.
Well, no. Is it good?
Not as good as the first.
Oh, okay.
It was a slow start, and then I just could not help but watch all the rest of the episodes all online. So if you're kind of like, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see if that was just me personally or not. But I thought after the first one, I was like, oh, I think I'm going to be disappointed. And then somewhere later, it was just like, oh, I got to watch the next one. So.
Okay, that's good. All right.
The guy that plays the Poe AI too.
Oh,
I was so happy to see that he was back because I didn't tend to watch. I don't tend to watch if I know I'm going to watch something anyway. A lot of the preview stuff, unless it falls in my lap. So I wasn't sure he was going to be in there. That I should have noted down the actor's name. His performance too of that character. I just loved it. Anytime he was on screen, I loved it.
Awesome.
And finally, Lincoln Rhimes, Hunt for the Bone Collector on NBC. It was a movie with Angelina Jolie and
a
while back based on a book. I forget the guy's name who wrote the book. It is a adequate police procedural. I always have a slot open for a good or even adequate police procedural. This fits the bill.
Did you watch Cardinal?
I did. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I love Cardinal. Yeah, okay. Cardinal was a good police procedural. Yeah,
but Cardinal is excellent.
Yeah.
And final season's coming.
Oh, they're going to do final. Oh.
Yeah, I guess really disappointed.
Given that they're actually doing character advancement, I guess that's not too surprising. Yeah, but
I was very disappointed to hear it'll be the last one.
And that's it for me for TV.
Do you have books?
I do.
Go for it. I have no books.
Oh, wow. I actually... Two of them are books that you gave me.
Oh.
So Marina last media spew sort of pseudo book crossed two graphic novels, actually a bunch of graphic novels, yeah. But two that I was interested in reading. One was Angel Catbird, written by Margaret Atwood, illustrated by Johnny Christmas.
Yeah.
What a strange book. I didn't know what to make of it. Like, and especially, maybe I shouldn't have read the preface, but she talked about doing these comic books as a kid. And it's like, you know, you could have not rehashed your kid idea. Maybe, I don't know.
Right? It's just such a, like, and perhaps it's this, perhaps for me, it's a misconception of what to, like, it's the expectation of the fact that this is Margaret Atwood. And then it's so pedestrian and kind of funny. Like, it just awkward.
Yes, all of those. Thank you. All of those.
Like,
and
awkward.
Two on the nose.
Yeah, so obvious. And I think that for me, that was part of the problem. Is maybe it was my own expectation and what I thought it was going to be, but I didn't think it was great.
I mean, oh, gee, the rat is a rat.
Really? Wow.
I mean, this... this is really maybe a little bit snarkier than I intend, but I have a little bit of a new respect for Marvel and some of the like subtlety and stuff they put into with like some of their characters. Anyway, so there's that. And Miss Finch, which,
oh yeah,
written by Neil Gaiman and illustrated by Michael Zulli. It felt like a bit of a throwaway. I haven't read, this is actually the first Gaiman graphic novel.
Oh, okay.
That I've read. I've read a whole ton of his books, mm-hmm. but the first graphic novel, it was like a standalone. It wasn't part of a bigger series. So it was kind of like the short story of graphic novels, I guess. I don't know. And yeah, it just didn't feel like, again, pedestrian comes to mind.
Yeah.
So I passed them along in good book crossing tradition. I'm kind of curious to hear what the next person thinks of them.
For sure.
And I actually read a book, the final novel in the Magician's trilogy, The Magician's Land by Lev Grossman. And it was a fun read. Not much more to say about it than that. I continued to be super fascinated by the way the characters changed in the adaptation and, you know, how they kept the spirit and some of the elements and reorganized them and still didn't destroy it. Like, that part is fascinating. And I think they actually have done a better job in the TV show with the characters. But like I said, it was a fun read. Like, to me, one of, even if I'm not sure what my reaction to a book is, if I read it in close to a go, like in less than a week, then for me, that's a good book, as opposed to one, you know, I put down and I pick up a month later. Yeah. And I read this pretty much all in a week and a half. So,
yeah. That's pretty good.
That's me for books.
I'm currently in the middle of one that I've been trying to read for a month. So, it doesn't bode well.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But I'm determined to finish the goddamn thing. podcasts, I have two. We Crashed, The Rise and Fall of WeWork.
Oh, man, that is like a hell of a story.
Yeah. So it's
And it's still in progress, too.
It is still in progress, still unfolding, but it's a 6-part.
Podcast. So,
yeah. It's a 6-part investigative podcast. Not really investigative podcast. It's a 6-part podcast on the story of WeWork, the rise and literal fall of WeWork and the people behind it.
What I know about WeWork, I think I heard on a Planet Money podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did not realize just how convoluted and crazy that story is.
Yeah. So this goes into some of that craziness into way more detail. Obviously, over 6 episodes. Each episode is about 30 some odd minutes long, so the shows aren't particularly long. It's really, really interesting and just kind of a cautionary tale about
hype.
Pretty much.
That is an insane story.
Oh, it's totally crazy. And then last time on the last episode, the last media spew that we did, Colleen had mentioned the Truth and Lies, the new series of Truth and Lies, which is on the Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. It's really good. Really good. Really in depth. Really, really well researched. Really disturbing. but really good. So I'm like more than halfway through. I think I have like two episodes left, but it's a really, really good podcast. Really good show. I think that's one of the ABC podcasts too. Really, really, really well done.
I wish I had time for more podcasts.
Yeah, me too. I seem to stockpile them, and then I listen to them. Like last week I was out and about a lot of the time. So I listened to this one in almost like 2 days, just as I was walking wherever I was going. So it's been really, really interesting.
Awesome.
Yeah. Highly recommended. That's all I have.
I have one thing to mention on podcasts. Season 4 of Scene on Radio is out. They're the one that did Men mm-hmm. and Seeing White.
Mm-hmm. Which I did listen to.
Oh, cool.
I did listen to Seeing White. I listened to part of Men. And then somewhere along the line, I don't know. I kind of lost interest or something. I'm not sure. But I did listen to the entire Seeing White, and I thought it was really fascinating.
So this one, the series is called The Land That Never Has Been Seen. Oh, no, sorry. The Land That Never Has Been Yet.
Oh.
Which is from a poem, apparently. And it is on American history.
Oh.
And it is pulling stuff out that I had never heard before and tying together some other threads in a context that I hadn't realized existed. And it is just kind of freaking amazing. Like, I knew that the American Revolution was not so much based on freedom as economics, but hearing stories of how basically like Washington and the other founding fathers of the day were rebelling against Britain because Britain was being too moral for them. They wanted to go and take Indian land, and the Brits were like, no, we have agreements. We're not.
So, interesting.
Yeah. Wow. Like, it puts a whole new perspective on American capitalism that I never realized was there. And
talk about timely.
The whole thing of the U.S. being devoted to this democracy and one man, one vote. Wow. Like, they have like letters that the founding fathers wrote where like one of them was like, we can't do real democracy. This is insane. This will destroy us. Like, whoa. Wow. Anyway, thus the title, The Land That Never Has Been Yet.
Yeah.
So I'm finding it fascinating. I think this of all the series is probably a bit niche, maybe. Like, you really have to be interested in history, and I don't know what the word is for it, but it's not propaganda precisely, but like the mythos around the creation of things. It's a really interesting listen.
Fascinating.
So far, and that's in progress.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Is that it? Is there anything else you want to mention while we're here?
No, I think that is the whole thing right there.
Yeah. I need to finish this damn book.
I know. I kind of burned out of books because the library with the hold system, sometimes you'll get a couple come up at once. I had this technical book and a fiction and a tech book come up at the same time, and I kind of burned out. I can't read anymore.
No, I know.
I'm trying to slam all these things before they do.
I'm literally in the middle of the rhythm section.
Oh,
I'm not really into spy things, and I'm in the middle of a spy book. It's beyond me how this came to be. I know how this came to be, but I've put it down twice. And I'm still determined. Now that I'm at the point where I'm like more than halfway, so I'm like, I gotta finish it.
Oh, okay. How many pages?
I don't know, like 400.
I think you can forgive yourself if you.
Oh no.
I certainly would.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just it's taking me forever to get back into it. So I think once I start picking it up and I actually read more than 10 pages, then I'll be okay. But
if the writing isn't grabbing you, I totally.
It's not.
It's okay. There's too many other good books out there.
I might have changed my mind by the time we record the next show. For now, I'm still determined to finish the goddamn thing. And that is the only thing that I'm determined to finish. Oh, that, and I have to watch Fleabag, apparently, because now there's like, you've told me I need to watch it, and 500 other people have told me I need to watch it. So I'm determined to finish Fleabag before the next
episode. You know, I haven't actually finished Fleabag.
Oh.
Because it's a kind of humor, like, so I'm not into the IT crowd, some of those other, like, if
the IT crowd is the best.
If it's too awkward, if the humor's too awkward, I can't deal with it. And Fleabag, like, oh my God, but her humor and her delivery is so amazing. I love watching it because I find that part of it enjoyable, but then it gets to, like, this super awkward moment, and it's like, nope, I'm going to go wash the dishes or something.
Oh, man, I love the IT crowd. It's been so long. I kind of feel like I need to watch an episode of that.
And, yeah, and Office and all of those.
Yeah, the Office I never got into, but the IT crowd, totally knee-deep, pretty good. So come on by etcpod.ca. We'll link to all the things we've talked about today, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the April preview. April preview. I had to think about that like three times. Oh my God.
It'll actually be daylight at 5 o'clock.
Oh
my God.
Oh, it's getting there. It's getting there.
Yeah.
So until next time.
We'll see you after the credits. It keeps me awake, the look on your face, the moment you heard the news. You're screaming. Forget. They aren't gonna help us. Too busy helping themselves. They aren't gonna change this.